This interview is with Margaret Nordley, a member of Trinity Lutheran Church in Moorhead since 1930, when she attended Concordia College as a student. She is now retired from the position of catalog librarian and professor of library science at Concordia. This interview was held at Moorhead State University's recording studio on February 27, 1985. The interviewer is Judy Kolb, representing the Heritage Education Commission. Margaret, when did you first come to Moorhead?
I came in 1930 as a freshman to Concordia College, and I came because my uncle, Professor H.C. Nordley, was on the faculty at Concordia. I stayed at his home, and he and his wife were very active in Trinity.
Why did you pick Concordia?
I came really because my uncle was here, but also I was a Lutheran. I'd been brought up in the Lutheran Church, and so it was a good thing to come to a Lutheran college at that time.
And then you joined Trinity Lutheran
Church? No, actually I didn't join. I was a student member, you might say. I attended regularly, and I taught Sunday school there.
Okay. How was Sunday school back in the 1930s?
Well, at that time, we didn't have any parish building at all, and so the classes had to be in the basement of the church. It was called a church parlor then. I taught in the primary Sunday school, which met at 11 o'clock during the morning service. There also was an intermediate Sunday school that met at 9:30 in the at 10 o'clock in the Sunday school rooms, and another class of senior high school that met at the at Concordia College at that time.
Was it in the present building that it's in now, where you taught in 1930? What was Trinity like in 1930?
It was a different church because church, which actually was the third church building, burned down in 1950, and so it was in that old church, and it was in the basement of that church that I had the Sunday school.
Okay. Then when you graduated from Concordia, what did you do?
Well, I went off. I taught 1 year in Kildare, North Dakota High School. I taught 6 years at Waldorf. When I first graduated, it was during the Depression, and so I went on to the University of Wisconsin and got my master's degree. Then I taught a year in Kildare, North Dakota High School, and then 6 years at Waldorf College, a junior college. Then I went to library school at the University of Michigan. I worked at the Ann Arbor, Michigan. I worked in Royal Oak, Michigan a year, and then in the Detroit Public Library for a year. And then I came back to Concordia in the fall of 1945.
Okay, why did you come back to Concordia?
Well, I got a letter from the president saying they were short-staffed and they really needed more help, and so I thought it would be very nice to come back to Concordia.
Okay, in 1945 then, you returned and became a member of Trinity.
Yes.
And what was Trinity like in 1945? This was at the end of the war?
Yes, it had grown a great deal from the earlier times. And so it was a big church. It had a fine choir. It was very, had a lot of people in Sunday school. And so I did, that time I didn't go back to Sunday school. Then I sang in the choir. And that was interesting. The choir loft was up in the front of the church. And so we sat there. And it was very fine.
About how many members were there at Trinity at this time?
When I came back in 1945, I think there were, I have the figure somewhere, 2,500 members. It had been growing all the time since it was first founded.
Okay, then there was, I believe, a fire at Trinity.
And yes.
And when did that happen? And tell us about that.
Well, it was in 1950, just 4 days before Easter. And I didn't go to see it because I was living on 6th Street. And when I woke up, I heard the sirens and I looked out, but I couldn't see anything because my room faced west. But the church burned very rapidly. Just in a few hours, the whole church had burned down during the night.
And did they know the cause of the fire?
I don't know they ever found out for sure, but they thought at the time there was a parish education building that had recently been built right next to the church, and they thought they had been working on connecting some of the electrical things between the two churches, between the church and the parish building, and so that perhaps is what caused the fire.
Then what did the congregation do that Easter?
We went to the Moorhead Armory, and they had a crowd. They had 2,000 people, which is pretty good, considering that our membership was about 2,500. And so it was a very inspiring service. And after that, they immediately started a building committee, and then we met at the junior high school, which was the Central Junior High, at that time the only junior high school. And we met there through 1951, and by 1952 we had a new church built on the same foundation.
Okay. And so the whole church was rebuilt?
Yes, it was.
And the parish hall also?
No, the parish hall had not been burned. For some reason, they were closely connected, but for some reason they were able to, I don't know just why, the parish building was not burned at all.
Okay. What was your worship experience like in 1945? What books did you use? Who was the pastor?
The pastor at that time was Roy Harrisville, and he was a wonderful preacher. And we were still using the Lutheran hymnary, which had been used by the Norwegian Lutheran Church from the early 1900s. And it was quite a conventional service. We had children's choirs, and we had a very fine adult choir and a good organ. Though, of course, when we got to the new church after the fire, then we got a much bigger, better organ.
Okay. Is it similar to the one that you use now in 1985?
Yes. You mean the service or the...
The organ.
The organ is the same. It was when it was put in, I forget the exact date, but it was a Holtkamp organ, and actually we had it rebuilt almost during their centennial. So it is a much bigger, better organ, but it's a very good organ.
Okay. What about education as far as the children are concerned? How has that changed?
That has changed a lot because the whole philosophy of education has changed. Back in 1930 and 31, when I taught the second grade, we had Bible stories and catechism, and that was what everybody had all the way along. But by the time then I taught after I'd been gone, I went off for four years, went to South Africa and taught in a mission school there. But when I came back, then I taught Sunday school again, and there it was quite different. Of course, they had a much, there wasn't nearly the emphasis on memorizing, on simple Bible stories anymore, but they tried to apply or to have a closer connection between the teachings and your life experiences.
You mentioned about your time spent away in Africa. Would you tell us something about that, Margaret, and why you went?
Yes. I had a very good friend who was a missionary in South Africa, and she wrote to me and to another college friend and said they were very short of teachers at the Zulu Lutheran High School, and she wondered if we couldn't consider coming for a short time anyway. So we talked to the mission chairman in our church, in our church body, and he said they hadn't had short-term teachers, but he would try sending us. We went for 2 years, but we stayed for three because the government of South Africa was planning to take charge of all the schools. They didn't want the churches running schools anymore. And so we stayed one more year, and at that time the government took over the running of all the
schools. And this was in what year?
That was 19... I came back. This was the end of 1944. So I came back in 1945.
Okay. Then when you returned then from your teaching in South Africa, did you share your experiences at all with the congregation?
Yes, there were opportunities to give talks and show slides.
And how did people react to your experiences?
Well, they think it's very strange, of course, because at that time it was still quite primitive in South Africa, and so people could hardly believe how they lived, how simply they lived.
Just explain maybe a day of your teaching experience in South Africa, what it was like.
Well, I was there 3 years, and 1 year I was called matron of the girls, and the girls lived in what's called a hostel, that's a dormitory. And early in the morning, the students had to help around the school, and so we got up around 6 o'clock, and then I would supervise the girls to do work. They had to rake lawns and wash. They cleaned windows by rubbing them with newspaper and do cleaning around the thing. Then we went to eat, and I sat and watched them eat because I didn't eat with them. They had to eat very simply. They had samp and beans. It's a form of corn, and then they had mealy meal porridge. That's made from corn also. And then we would go to school, and I think the school started about 7:30 or so, and then we would have a chapel service at the beginning. The Zulus loved to sing, so that was always fun. They liked to sing in parts. They always seemed to sing in parts, even from childhood. And then we had classes. I taught mostly history and some English and some religion. And then at noon we had a break, and we went to this friend of mine who'd gone down with me. It was Evangeline Quam from Fergus Falls, and so we had a little house on the grounds, and we went and made our lunch, and then I think we had to go with the girls. One of us had to go with the girls. They were very strict then to watch to see that the boys and girls didn't get together too much, because there were troubles with that. So we always had to go to meals, and one of us sit and watch them.
How old were these children?
It was actually like a freshman and sophomore in high school.
I see. Okay. So anyway, then you came back then from your teaching experiences in South Africa. And we're talking here about education. What about adults at Trinity now when you returned? How were adults educated?
There still wasn't too much for them, except there were weekly Bible studies and there were training sessions for the teachers and so forth. But there still wasn't any. Later on, we started with having Sunday program, a Bible study and another kind of program, which we now call the Adult Forum, which has speakers from all kinds of different topics.
Okay. And what experiences are open now for adults at Trinity?
Well, there are quite a few. As we have these two, that is a Bible study at Sunday morning between our two services, and this Adult Forum. And also during the week, we have some classes. There is a Bethel Bible class and various other shorter programs of classes.
Okay. We talked a little bit about the church and when it burned down, but perhaps you could tell us a little bit more about the physical plant at Trinity, what it's like and what's in the parish building and this sort of thing.
Yes, when the church was built, it was on the same spot and somewhat the same foundation, but they did make it larger. And then the parish building is attached to it, and that too was enlarged because the church kept growing, and actually in the 1960s we had the largest number. We had up to 1,200 in Sunday school, and so there it really made use of all the rooms. And but then the enrollment started going down again because of the general population having less children. So then they took various rooms. We have other in the parish building, we have one chapel on the main floor, which is connected to the main church, and that is used for overflow. And on most Sundays, that is also used as part of the church service. And on the floor above that, there is a large room, which is used for gathering for Sunday school and also for youth activities. And then we have a church library, which was started about 1960. Before that time, the Ladies' Aid had their own little library. But in 1960, then, the Ladies' Aid and the parish education library was joined, and we started a church library, and we've had a room ever since in the building.
And about how many volumes are in there?
Well, we have about 4,500 or around 5,000, I think.
Mm-hmm. And it's primarily of a religious nature?
There are a great many religious books, but we do have other general books, too. We have quite a bit of fiction and biography, and we have a young people's section and a children's section, and the children are the best readers. They're more fond of coming in to read than anyone else.
Okay. What about the church organizational structure? Tell me something about the Lutheran Church and how it operates.
Well, we always have, originally we had a board of trustees and a board of deacons, but later that was changed, and now we have a church council of 24 members that is elected by the church, and they choose their own officers to be in charge of the church. So we don't elect a president as such, but we elect the council, and from them, and they choose. And it was interesting in that, although Trinity's let the women vote from the very beginning, and that was quite unusual because in most Norwegian Lutheran churches, the women didn't get the vote till quite a bit later. But they always had the vote, only there were never any women on the church council. It was just understood that women were not to be the leaders.
But they could always vote.
They could always vote,
But they never were on the council such.
They couldn't be on the council. But in the 1960s, and it was because of the general women's liberation movement, mm-hmm. that someone started saying, well, we should have women on the church council. So it gradually increased. So now we have maybe not half, but close to it. And we've had a couple cases where a woman has been the president of the council, and that meant the president of our church.
Mm-hmm. And so what relationship then is the council to the pastor?
The pastor is on the council, and they work with him quite closely to make all the decisions.
And then when you have, tell us something about the pastors that you have now, how many and how they're chosen.
We have four pastors. The senior pastor is Reverend David Anderson, and he's been there about 12 years. The plan that is used in selecting the pastor is the congregation. And now our second pastor is Reverend Marvin Witte, and the third one, Reverend Wayne Anderson, and he has recently resigned. So now we have a call committee, and that call committee is appointed by the council, and they consult with the district president, and then they go around to listen to various people that might be possible candidates. And when they find somebody, then they present his name to the church. We have to have a meeting, the church congregation, and a vote is taken to see if he should be called. And then he is called, and then we wait to see if he will answer. Then the fourth pastor is a senior, the one who works with senior citizens and hospital visitation. I'm not sure if he's full-time. That's Reverend Norman Benson.
Okay. And what position do the other ones hold then? What do they have, specific jobs?
The work is divided, but I'm not positive. Just I know Wayne Anderson has had charge of the education work, so he's worked with like our Bethel Bible Study and so forth. And Reverend Witte does a great deal of hospital visitation. He works with the council is divided up into various committees, and the congregational life one is the one that Reverend Witte especially works with, and that has to do with getting new members and giving orientation to them, and all the visitation of the people who are ill, and the church libraries under that.
What about how does Trinity relate to other churches in the community? And I'm specifically speaking of the other Lutheran churches.
So we have very good connections with them. Was that the other churches, you know, originally when Trinity started, they had 42 members. Then later, in the 1930s, they decided it was difficult for the children to come from the north side to go to Sunday school. And so they established a chapel in the north side. And later that became a church in the 1940s that became Our Savior's Lutheran Church. And Trinity turned over quite a few members and also loaned them the money for quite a while. Then in the 1950s, another church was established. Trinity wasn't directly responsible. That was Good Shepherd, but it was the same synod, and quite a few of our members moved there. And then in the 1960s, another church was started, Christ the King, and there our church sponsored that with a loan. And so actually now, of these four churches, all the same denomination, there are about 10,000 members.
Okay, and Trinity had a hand?
Yes, Trinity was really the only one at the beginning, you know, mm-hmm. the one that started it all.
Okay. How about as far as participating with other churches in Communiversity and sharing, any sharing that might go on?
Yes, one way they join is in release time, that on Wednesdays it is now, the schools allow the children to be taught on release time. And that is worked jointly with the other churches, the other Lutheran churches. They have all participate in selecting teachers and supplying material and so forth.
Okay, tell us something about the organizational structure of the Lutheran Church as outside of the city of Moorhead and how Trinity relates to that.
Well, I should go back into history a little bit. Originally, of course, our church was Norwegian, and for a long time, our church body was called the Norwegian Lutheran Church of America. And one of our pastors, J.E. Osgaard, who was president of Concordia and also then was assistant pastor at Trinity, became the president of this church. And that continued until about, they finally changed their name, I think in the 1940s sometime, to the Evangelical Lutheran Church. Well then, because there were various other churches, the various people that came from Europe, more or less, established churches according to national lines, because like the Swedish had their church because they had taught, and they originally had Swedish, and Trinity originally had Norwegian. They had everything was in Norwegian at the very beginning. But in 1960 then they merged, and then we joined with what was formerly called the American Lutheran Church. That was a church of German background, and the a Danish church, and later the Lutheran Free Church. And there we have the plan. There is the main church, the synod, and then there are districts, and we belong to the Northern Minnesota District. Then there are circuits, and we belong to the Moorhead Circuit. And all of those are associations of the people of the American Lutheran Church.
And then you have general conventions?
Yes, we have a national convention every 2 or 3 years, and then we have a district convention every year and a circuit convention every year, I think.
Wasn't there one recently held in Moorhead?
Yes, the National Church Convention was held here in October.
October of
1984.
In 1984. Mm-hmm. And how was Trinity involved in that?
There was a lot of volunteer work provided by Trinity, and also they had a communion service at the opening part of the service where they came to Trinity to take part in it.
Mm-hmm. And were you involved in any of this?
I attended quite a few sessions, and I did help with, they had their meals at Concordia, and so I was on a volunteer committee to help direct people at mealtime and so forth.
And did you find this interesting?
Yes, it was very interesting because we saw a lot of people that we had known from, we used to go to conventions. When the church was smaller, we used to go to conventions much more often and got better acquainted with everyone.
And about how many people were here?
I think they had about 1,000 people for that convention.
Okay. What other changes have you noticed, or other trends have you noticed in the Lutheran Church in the last 30, 40 years, Margaret?
Well, there is certainly a trend toward cooperation. Originally, we wanted to stay so much by ourselves, but now our church is in process of uniting with the former Swedish church and a former English Lutheran church. That happened, the United Lutheran Church and the Augustana Lutheran Church merged to become the Lutheran Church of America, and now we are in the process of joining with them, and so there will be one big church body where when I was growing up, the Swedes were just impossible. They were just beyond our comprehension. And so, and that just continued for a very long time, but now that is entirely being done away, and partly it's because of hymn books. Originally, we had this Lutheran hymn book, but in 1960, when we had our first merger to become the American Lutheran Church, we had a joint hymn book that was called the Service Book and Hymnal. And there, that had been prepared jointly with several other bodies. So that made quite a change. And that was hard for some of the members in our church to accept. They just couldn't see why we had to have a new hymn book when we'd had the other one for such a long time. But eventually they got to accept it. Well, then that really helped to provide a merger because we were using a common hymn book. Well, then they decided to put in another one, and there the Lutheran Church in America and the people of Swedish background were in on that. So about 1976 or so, we got the new book, which is called the Lutheran Book of Worship. And that is helping to promote this merger with the Swedish and the other Lutherans because we're using the same hymn book.
Do you think primarily it's based on nationalistic terms? You mentioned
yes.
The Swedish, mm-hmm. rather than a theological base?
Yes, pretty much. It's more customs that each church has, but they really, at least it seems to us, it's mainly a national background and not really a basic theological
difference. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that someday, perhaps, it won't make that much difference then?
No, theoretically, no.
Okay. It should be. Okay. Are there anything else about Trinity that you would care to share with us?
Well, one thing is about women's work I was going to mention. And when I first came in 1930, my aunt was very active in the church. And they had a missionary society that met twice a month in the afternoons. And they had some small dues, and they also had lots of money-making projects, especially to support missionaries. Well, when I came back in 1945, it was now the group was called the Women's Missionary Federation, but they still met in the afternoons. Then one of the pastors, I think it was Pastor Oscar Anderson, decided there ought to be something for women who worked, because by that time a lot of women were beginning to work, in the 1950s anyway. So he started an evening guild. Then we also had a group that started out for the young women called the Lutheran Daughters of the Reformation. But as the women grew older and the ones who didn't get married kept in the group, and so we had a very active group there. Well, then when we had this merger of 1960, our pastor thought we really should get all the women together. And so then we merged and had just one American Lutheran Church Women, it was called, and our group was called the Trinity Lutheran Church Women. And that meant part-time in the afternoon, part-time in the evening, and included all the single women and the married women and so forth.
And then what was your primary function?
There are various things. For one thing, we sponsor the circles, and in circles we have Bible studies, and those meet once a month, and that also helps people get better acquainted. And we also have programs of various topics, and we also contribute to our national group, which supports missions and supports various projects that have to do with the church.
And how do you raise those funds?
We have what is called the worship offering. That was started back in the 1950s or 60s, I think. Before that, they used to have dues, but it's entirely the worship offering, and you give an offering at the time that you come to your meeting.
Okay. Do you see an increase in membership in these women's organizations?
Well, women nowadays are so very busy, it's a little harder to get them to attend. So I don't know that our large group gets any bigger. Our circles may, because that's more of an opportunity to get better acquainted.
Mm-hmm. And what function do they serve in the church? Do they participate in serving funerals? What do they do anything, the traditional role of women in the church?
We still do a lot of that. Although a number of years back, we divided into serving groups for the whole church. And instead of that used to be done by circles, but then it was decided to try to involve all the women. And so we divide all the women in the church are divided into serving groups, and we serve for 1 month every 2 years. And the serving group serves funerals and weddings and the Sunday morning coffee hour and the meeting of the ladies' aid. But years ago they used to serve other groups, but they decided they could not do anything except these basic services for the church.
Mm-hmm. And so these are primarily for members then?
Yes.
Of the church that they serve. Mm-hmm. So it isn't any outsiders that would come in and want to.
No.
Has this changed at all? Did they used to do
yes,
that?
Yes, they used to serve outside groups, especially like even other church groups that would want to come in and have something.
And when women started going back to work,
yes,
I would suspect that that was when that
yes,
ended.
Yes, you had to cut down. You just couldn't offer any more than the basic services.
Okay. Has there been any other changes as far as women in the church, in the Lutheran Church at Trinity, that you can think of?
Well, as I said, when the women got in the church council, and generally then they've taken a much more active part. Though they always were busy, but in the early days it was mainly in the service division.
Have you ever had a woman pastor at Trinity?
No, we haven't. I don't know whether there are many women pastors available right now, but I guess there still is a little bit of hesitancy about getting one.
Well, thank you very much, Margaret, for sharing your experiences in Trinity Lutheran Church.
Well, I hope I haven't said too many things that are wrong. It's sort of hard to remember in many cases, and it's my impression. I want to say that, too. So I wouldn't want this to be the final authority on what's happened in Trinity Church.
Thank you.